and Caleb Collier said.
I'm proposing that the city of Spokane Valley issue a proclamation stating that our city is a Second Amendment sanctuary city.
Welcome to the fire. Welcome to the fire.
Today on Church and State, author, podcaster, screenwriter, Andrew Clavin. Before we go there, Church and Saint and State, we want to remind you, the reason why we are here is to destroy and obliterate the illusion, the myth that is the separation of church and state. We want you to know, God did not want you to be outside the realm of civics. He wanted to be inside it. And that is our mission here today. We want to go back and highlight our website, churchandstate.media, before we have our guest on. Please go check out our past interviews. We've had some phenomenal ones. The world-renowned Laura Logan was here in studio. We asked her probably six of the most uncomfortable questions you could ever ask a very amazing woman like herself. Covered topics like, is the earth flat? Was the assassination of JFK real? Was the moon landing real? We also asked her if Osama bin Laden actually died. These are great questions. Please go back, check that out. Also check out some of our sponsors, Andrew Sorcini, Beverly Hills Precious Metal. We're really trying to encourage you as the economic onslaught is coming up, please get silver gold. Get it physically in hand. You can talk to somebody on the phone. You can also go ahead and go online, begin to fill out an application to have somebody speak with you. With that, we want to get right into this. We have a real, awesome man of God, and his testimony is impactful. I want to say a little bit about him. Andrew Clavin, he has gone by the pseudonym Keith Peterson, wrote amazing books in the past, also been a, through his stories, his movies have come to screen. One of my favorites, True Crime, Clint Eastwood starred in that. Also, Don't Say a Word. I'm excited to ask him about Brittany Murphy, if he ever got to meet Brittany Murphy. That one starred Michael Douglas in 2001. He has a podcast on the Daily Wire that is just phenomenal. I've been binge listening to it. His insights are absolutely impactful to you as a Christian. Here's why: because he is born a Judeo-Christian. Excuse me, not Christian. He was just born, practicing a Jewish faith. He came across Jesus Christ, and I think his life was violently changed. And I don't use that word violently lightly, because we've seen in the writings of C.S. Lewis, when a brilliant mind comes to Christ, there is a wake that is similar to a tsunami. And I believe that that is personally what is happening in your life. Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I sent you a little video clip of an experience, a dream I had, where it's like, I was at this party and all these elite stars, I'm talking, were there at the party, and I didn't have any clue what was going on. They're all talking to the right, and Jesus is on my left hand. I didn't know it was Jesus at the time. And he said to me, he never said a whole long sentence. He just said one word. He said provision. And I believe, Andrew, you're part of that provision. I could not even imagine interviewing somebody of your caliber. This is all Jesus. I can't. You know, we have somebody who reaches out and looks for bookings. I can't even believe you've said yes. So I don't want to fanboy too long.
That's kind of you to say, and I hope you're right. I hope you're, I've been sent.
You are. Well, you recently sent me an article, and that's kind of going to be the foundational process of where we head. The article is in the City Journal, cityjournal.org. And it's titled, Andrew Clavin, Can We Believe? A Personal Reflection on Why We Shouldn't Abandon the Faith That Has Nourished Western Civilization. As we go into this article, I want to tell you, Andrew, you hit a subject as far as in Europe, there's this self-hate. And it's really, to me, I'll just be frank, it's disgusting, because my grandfather, his name's Andrew, same name as you, Andrew Santana, he's a Mexican-American, very dark skin. This is all before Black Lives Matter. He went in and at 17 years old, signed up for the military, fought in World War II and the Korean War. He spoke fluent German. He was in the foster system, was raised by a German family. So he was used on the very close to the front lines to interrogate the SS. He fought in battles like I'm talking, I just recently watched some of the battles he was in. And then I watched things like you know, the winters of Bastogne, and seeing that these guys were freezing cold, fighting for those Europeans to have their freedom. And now they think that they've found this apex moment where they are so enlightened, but yet it came at the hands of the Western muscle, the young men, the greatest generation that ever lived. And I felt in this article, you're saying humanity, we're kind of this crosshair moment. And I want to have that as a platform. Stimulate us on how you got to that kind of equation.
Well, I noticed something a while back, really years before I even wrote the article, which was that there were a lot of good people, intellectual people, who came to understand that basically Christianity itself was the underpinning of everything that we believe and everything we hope for and everything we feel is right and wrong, and that it had entirely shaped our world. And this was before, I believe, Tom Holland wrote the book Dominion, or right about the same time, where he basically, he's a historian who's only now beginning to turn to Christ. But at the time, he was not a Christian. He wrote this book Dominion, which just explains how Western civilization is permeated with Christianity. Everything we believe was things we believe were not believed before, especially things like the rights of women, the taking care of the poor. The very heartbeat of Christianity kind of worked its way into the Western world. And none of these people, even though they understood that you could not pull out that bottom block of the Jenga tower without the whole thing collapsing, they couldn't bring themselves to believe. They would say, we should pretend to be Christians, we should be like unto Christians, we should be secular Christians. Even Richard Dawkins now, the famous atheist, is saying he doesn't really want to see Christianity go away. He just doesn't want it to have anything to do with God. And I actually could sympathize with that. I did not become a Christian until I was 49 years old. I had to go down every wrong path before I was convinced that this was right. And the reason was simple. It had to do with the kind of intellectual atmosphere. It was not the fact that it didn't make any sense. It was the fact that it felt like it didn't make any sense. It felt that science had disproved the Bible, or that it had disproved the kind of thinking that went into the Bible. And it was just a feeling that you had, basically, the people have had in the West, basically since Newton, when they started to think, oh, you know, nothing is miraculous. Everything is just a kind of machine that unfolds, and every physical thing has a physical cause, and every effect has a beginning somewhere in the physical world. Interestingly, that has turned out to be completely untrue. It's turned out, with as science has progressed, we've started to find out that human consciousness, at least, plays some part in the formation of reality, which leads us to the undeniable idea that reality itself is formed by a consciousness. So really, the people who feel that science has disproved faith are about 100 years behind the thinking and behind the science. And so what I've been predicting for years is that there was going to be a revival at the intellectual level, as there was, in fact, back in the 19th century, what was called the Oxford movement, when some of the most intelligent people in Britain started to say, no, you know, the foundations of the faith are secure, and started to move back to it. And I think that I've been predicting that for more than a decade, and it's happening now. We see it with Ian Hersey Ali, guys like Tom Holland, the historian, Russell Brand. I don't know if you'd call him an intellectual, but he's a very intelligent comedian. And
just recently got baptized.
Just got baptized. And this is not a surprise to me at all, because they're simply catching up with things that have been discovered that are giving intellectuals a path back in.
Article, I got to say, it's funny. You write about Jordan Peterson, and we've seen Jordan Peterson edging up to the water even closer, kind of in similar fashion, like Russell Brand. So continue.
Well, yeah, and Jordan is a wonderful guy. He is an absolutely gracious person. His wife just got baptized. And, you know, they went through a very, very difficult health experience, and she came out of it thinking, no, I now see what this is. And so she just got baptized as well. And so this is happening a lot. And it's, as I say, it's no surprise to me at all, because having the life that I've had, which has been a life in the arts, I've lived in New York, I've lived in LA, I've lived in London, I've lived in places where if you said, by the way, I believe in Jesus Christ, you were just expelled from the dinner party. People just looked at you as if you were insane. And it's very hard when you're in that atmosphere to break with that. You know, I mean, the comparison I always make is with George Washington, who was an absolute virtuous man and a hero of liberty. He couldn't understand for much of his life why his slaves were unhappy being slaves. And you think, like, how is that possible that a man who loved liberty so much couldn't understand that his slaves loved liberty too? And that's the effect of culture. That's the effect of the intellectual atmosphere that you're in. That atmosphere is breaking. That clouds are parting. I think a lot of people are coming around, and I think it's going to be a very beautiful thing. I don't know. You know, the world is always going to be a troublesome place. The world doesn't belong to us. The world belongs to our enemy. That's going to be true till the end of time. But I do think it would be a very beautiful thing if the people who are thinking and creating art and creating literature and creating philosophy started to understand that we're dealing not just with our consciousness creating reality, but with a reality that was created by a consciousness outside us. And once they start to see that, I think the rest will follow.
And, you know, the world very much, you know, for God so loved the whole entire cosmos that he sent his only begotten son. God wants to reach the theological deep people, you know, the very theologically sound people. And he wants to reach Hollywood as well, screenwriters, you know, the people like I had in my dream, the brilliant minds that are the elites. God wants to reach them. He very much does. I love it when Jesus, he's just, Bible says he's young. He's literally probably 12, maybe 13. The Sanhedrin is just in awe of this young man's wisdom, but yet his coming out party, his revelation was to a simple woman who'd had six previous marriages at a well. So he wants to reach both, and we have to be equipped with the knowledge to be able to reach both. That's why I'm so appreciative of somebody like yourself. You're like a modern day C.S. Lewis. Your story is powerful. No, you are. You really are. You have a brilliant mind. I'm telling you, every single brain cell in my head firing all at the same time. I'm having a very, very short foot race to keep up with you. So, but God is using people like you and myself because I'm trying to reach your everyday person as well. But Jordan Peterson, there has to be this moment where it's like, I would suspect his wife, where it went from the synapse to the cardia. It went from this to here. How did that happen for you? I'm intrigued because on a recent trip to Israel, when I went into Jerusalem, I literally, no joke, Andrew, I felt, and I told my tour guide, I said, in tears, I was crying. I was a mess just about the whole time I was there in Israel. I said, I've never felt so at home, like I've been here before. But yet, you know, he did tell me, hey, you can't live here. You're not, you know, you have no Jewish blood in you. And I said, well, I've been grafted in. And he said, well, that simply is not good enough. And I'm thinking the other way, like, you're going to get brought into heaven eventually when you find Jesus. How did you find Jesus, Andrew?
Well, it was obviously, since I was 49, it was a long story. But one of the things that's really interesting is a while back, I was at a symposium in Florence, and it was not a religious symposium necessarily, though most of the people there, I think, were believers of one sort or another. It was mostly scientists and me. You know, I don't know how exactly I got in there, but it was mostly scientists. And there were a number of them who were Jewish converts. And one evening, we were always sitting at different tables. And one evening, they just put all the Jewish converts together. And I don't know if they did it as a joke or a prank, but they just did it. And we all started to realize that we had all come down a similar road. And one of the things that was really interesting is all of us had come to this place through logic. We had not had a sort of charismatic, emotional experience. We had reached a place where we simply understood that we could not go on thinking without accepting the truths that we had gathered, you know, just by thinking things through. I always say that I only ever took one leap of faith in my life, and that was the leap of faith that it's better to give a beggar bread than to torture a child to death. And I say that obviously exaggerating, but what I mean by that is there are some things that are bad, even if everybody on earth says they're good. It wouldn't matter. If you landed on the planet of the Nazis would still be wrong. And once you start to think that, you think, well, how is that possible? For that to be possible, there has to be an objective good. For there to be an objective good, there has to be a consciousness that can choose between good and evil, because, you know, a hurricane isn't good or bad. It's just a hurricane. Everything starts to kind of unravel from that point. And that's the only leap of faith I ever took. That's the only time I ever said, I can't prove that it's a bad thing to torture a child. I can't prove that. I don't have any logic for that. but I will not accept that it could possibly be a good thing. And once I made that leap of faith, everything else really just unraveled for me. And the thing that held me back was that in my late 20s, I had a very terrible emotional mental break. I went insane. I think that's a fair, fair way to put it. And I was suicidal. I was delusional. I was having all kinds of really, really crazy thoughts and feelings. And by what I now believe to have been a miracle of God, I knew ultimately, because of my wonderful wife, I knew I needed help. You know, I knew I was crashing in some terrible way. And I found a psychiatrist. He was not a believer. He was just a brilliant, brilliant psychiatrist. And he cured me.
Wow.
And, or I should say, in our therapy, I was cured. And I've never met anybody else who has made that journey. I've never met anybody else who went from that level of crazy to the level of sane I was about 2 to 3 years after I met this guy. And the only time I ever surprised him was many years later after our therapy was done, when I went back to him and said, listen, I've been baptized. It was the only time I ever saw his jaw drop. You know, what do you mean? And the reason that's a very touching story to me is after the therapy was over, I was thinking about a lot of the, you know, kind of Freudian insights that I had had in therapy. And I realized they were all untrue. I realized that all the insights that I thought had cured me weren't scientific. They weren't real. Studies had been done disproving them. And I started to think, well, then what was it that cured me? And I realized that what it was the love between this man and me, that he had become the only mentor I had ever had in my life. And he was kind of what my father should have been to me and wasn't. Maybe my older brother, I don't know. You know, he was a little young to be a father figure, but he was a mentor. And I realized that in the process of that love, all the healing had taken place. And once I saw that, and because I am in such a remarkable, likewise miraculous marriage, I began to realize that love was the core of everything, and love was the creative force in the world. Love was the source of all joy. And that started me back to sort of thinking, well, you know, I've read a lot about that in the Gospels. Maybe I should go back and look at these. And it was a slow journey. And because I'm such a stubborn cuss, I was unwilling to make that leap while I was miserable, because I thought, well, then it's just a crutch, you know.
Right.
The time when I needed God most, I wouldn't reach out to him because I thought, you know, no, then I won't believe it. I'll just think I did it as a crutch.
Right.
But afterwards, I was so joyful, and I thought, you know, the logic still holds. The things I thought still hold. So now I have to start thinking about that, and I started praying, and with that, you know, I was doomed. I mean, after I started praying, so
You're
much
hooked.
Of my life.
Yeah. You found the water. Back to the story of the woman at the well. He says, hey, you don't ever have to grab a bucket ever again. The type of water I'm going to give you. She eventually, you know, runs down the mountain, wants to tell everyone, because he says there's going to be new worshipers. And I feel like, you know, there's a statement Jesus says. He goes, there's going to be worshipers who worship in spirit and in truth. I feel like the Jewish people as a whole are so intelligent. So they've got this type of moxie and just like spunk and like authority in the business markets and theater and just writers, just so just creative, but they didn't have that spirit connection where it's the heart and the mind. And, and I'm seeing more and more, I really have belief that we're going to see a rise in Israel of people coming to Jesus Christ. And in, I feel like it's part of a culture shift right now. Even with, you know, I feel like Donald Trump, you said some, you know, it's like a statement you said, and I people get so frustrated when people who like Trump, we make him a god. But you have a quote, there is a Trump-filled hole in politics that somebody would have filled. Anybody would have filled it. Being the right kind of guy who was America first, but talk about that Trump filled hole. And then also kind of correlate it to like, there's a God filled hole in all of us.
There's no question about this. I mean, I think that, you know, what I used to have these arguments with friends of mine who were kind of never Trumpers. They were conservatives, but they just couldn't stand Trump. And I gotta be honest, I have some sympathy with that. I think he's rude. I think he's lived a life I can't really recommend. I still think he does things recklessly and talks too much and all these, well, you know, he has all these flaws. Unlike the rest of us who are perfect, he has all these flaws.
Unlike the rest of us.
Yeah. And And I used to say that, yes, but, you know, the people who love him and support him see something that the rest of us aren't seeing, that some of us are maybe too, you know, intellectual to see, but the people see it. And it's really important because it's been missing from our politics. And when Trump was elected, I mean, a lot of people yelled at me when I said I was going to vote for him in his first in 2016. But I thought, well, he's better than Hillary Clinton, that's for sure. And when he came in, he was actually a good president. And you could see that the energy that he was bringing, the common sense that he was bringing, the simple things that he was doing to give the government back to the people were what was needed. And it's unfortunate to say that it required a man like him, a sort of unbridled, unchained, you know, King Kong of a guy who was willing to face the things that he faces. I'm watching him now as they're trying him for absolute nonsense, a trial that I consider horrible, as bad as he says it is. And he's unbreakable. I mean, how many people could be charged with 90 felonies? And I've read every indictment that's come out against him word for word. And every one of them is nonsense. If it's not nonsense, it's something that no one else, that other people have done, that no one has ever been charged with before. And yet he stands up to it with this kind of panache that I just don't think many people could bring. And so there are people who are smarter. There are people who know their constitution better. There are people who are more statesmanlike than he is. But I don't think any of them, or at least none of them that I have seen, could withstand the absolute tidal force of the resistance against him. And I think that that is what the people knew was necessary. And they knew that his common sense response to this idea that government is going to save us, it's going to answer all our questions for us, it's going to give us everything we need, all we have to do is give up all our power, all our freedom, all our will and our religion, and it'll be, everything's going to be fine. I think it took a bull of a man to do that, and the people saw it and they see it still. And, you know, yeah, do I wish that a guy like Ron DeSantis had that quality in him? I do. I really do. I wish a more statesmanlike man could bring that quality to the field. But this is the man that we were given. And I, you know, you read the Bible and you see people who were sent to lead the people in times of need, from Samson to David to all of them. And you think, like, you know, they weren't the guy that you think they were. They weren't the guy who was pristine and buttoned down and knew how to maneuver things. They were just guys who felt it and felt their way and did the thing that had to be done. And so I think he's that guy. And you know, I think when you talk about a God-shaped hole, I in no way want to compare Trump to right. God or anybody yeah. else to God. But I think that sensation is important, because one of the arguments that atheists or just worldlings use is that you want to believe in God. You want this thing. You're hungry for this thing. And so you take it to your comfort, and, you know, it's just something you want to believe. But as C.S. Lewis pointed out, you know, there's nothing else that we're hungry for that we don't have. You know, you're hungry for food, you have food. You're hungry, you need drink, you have drink. Everything that we yearn for in life exists. There's nothing that you yearn for that does not exist. And so C.S. Lewis turned that argument around on them. And I think that that's true, you know, a lot of times in politics as well. You know, even when you get a genuinely bad guy, the people are usually looking for something good, right. And that bad guy is tricking them into thinking that he's the guy.
Yeah. Also, it's just cultural. Everyone loves the underdog story. You're such a good writer. That archetype is so old. It's not anything new, whether it's Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, whether it's, you know, Lord Sauron, you know, and any of the C.S. Lewis characters. There's an old, ancient story, which we talked about off air, between Lucifer and the heavenly hosts and the one, the Most High Elohim. That word Elohim in the Bible, it's a Hebrew word. It just simply means God. It's actually a plural word. The word Elohim means many gods. So there are many gods. Lucifer was one of them, but there's only one Yahweh. There's only one like him. And there's this ancient battle. I want to play for our listeners, those right now. There's a story called Paradise Lost. And I found out through listening to some of your podcasts, you're a fan of the story. As a story writer, I could see why you'd be drawn to it. We're going to play a clip. At the very end of it, you're going to see the way that this actor is basically summing up how he feels Lucifer is and how he feels Gabriel, Michael, the angels are. And you watched it. We're going to go ahead and play it, and then we're going to make that a jumping platform. Here you go.
Subject. And the very last thing a major big budget blockbuster adaptation of sacred source material needs is accusations of blasphemy and a countrywide protest and boycott campaign. Production would halt 6 months later as the filmmakers were making casting decisions and scouting filming locations. No reason for the turnaround was ever discussed in public, and all updates on the movie now ceased. Then it was announced on September the 16th, 2010, that Alex Proyas, the visionary director of The Crow, Dark City, and I, Robot, had signed on to direct, and along with the production designer, Owen Patterson, would spend the next 12 months redrafting the script and pre-visualizing the entire film, including the planned set-piece spectacle, supernatural warfare among angry immortals in the sky. It was announced in May 2011 that Bradley Cooper would be stepping into the role of Lucifer.
You know, this fall I'm going to hopefully do this movie Paradise Lost,
right.
And then maybe The Crow, and then so I'm looking at next summer.
Paradise Lost. Right. Studied it in college, loved it. Had a great Jason Rosenblatt, who's a Milton scholar at Georgetown. I love the idea of Lucifer being, you know, a very charismatic guy who you agree with, basically. He makes a very sound argument in that poem. And then cut to Legendary Pictures that did The Hangover is the one doing Paradise Lost.
Right.
So I read the script, and I love the idea of two sons and a father. And one day the father says to the son, you know, our family dog, I love the family dog more than you guys. And I'm actually going to build a whole house for the dog to live in. And come here, let me show you. Actually, you guys are going to build the house that our dogs. And I'm like, Dad, you're going crazy. And then my brother says, no, Dad's right. I said, no, Dad's not right. So I just like the simplicity of it. I always felt a hook into that. And then the betrayal that he feels. So I actually put myself on tape for it.
I'm going to go ahead and just re-kind of cap it, because I know you've watched it once, but you didn't get to hear the audio right there. Bradley Cooper at the very end, who he's cast as Lucifer. Legendary Pictures cast him to be it. Now, the movie fell through. They run out of funding. I also believe that either it wasn't Lucifer's timing, because I know he exists. Maybe he doesn't want it out now. Or God shut it down. But here's the thing, your dramas that, you know, stories are based on lore. You know, you didn't know, or maybe you did know, Clint Eastwood would be in the movie True Crime. Did you know that?
No, it happened very suddenly, actually. It had been with another studio and it fell through, and they called me up and said, we're just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. And within like a month, Clint Eastwood picked it up and started making it.
What an explosion. What an honor to have. Now, Bradley Cooper was supposed to play Lucifer. And as a writer, when you write these, you don't know who's going to play your character. You don't know what they look like. Well, Bradley Cooper there at the end in this interview, he says, basically, I determined that this poem is all about, you know, basically two sons and a father. And one of the sons is basically, you know, the father says to his sons, hey, you know, son, I'm going to give the family inheritance to the family dog. And just so everyone knows, we're the dog. Humanity, we're the dog. And the older, you know, one of the sons says, no, Dad, you're wrong. You can't give it to them. And the dad's like, no, I am. And the other son's like, it's okay. That's their way of Hollywood saying Jesus gave the inheritance to the family dog. And in a way, you know what? We are humbly and fearfully made. But it gave me a visual on how Lucifer feels about us. He thinks he's the true son.
You know, Paradise Lost was a little painful about this. I mean, it's funny because Hollywood is so much itself that it's you can't help but laugh. But Paradise Lost is one of the greatest poems ever written, and it's certainly among the greatest poems written in English. And Milton was an English poet, second really only to Shakespeare. He was one of the Puritans. He was a Protestant, and he had participated in overthrowing the king. The king had been beheaded, and he had basically signed off on that and spent a lot of his life running for his life. When the king came back, he had to run for his life and hide out a long time, and didn't write Paradise Lost until much later in his life. And what he was thinking about as this poem formed in his mind was why it was all right to overthrow a king, but not all right to rebel against God. That was really the argument he was making, because Milton was one of the founding thinkers on free speech, on freedom of thought. And, you know, we owe a lot to Milton as a political thinker as well. And he was trying to explain why it was all right to overthrow a king, but because we're no man's slave, but why it's not all right to overthrow God. And so he invented this wonderful character, Satan. The Satan in this poem is one of the great characters in literature, who thinks that he can withstand God because his mind is so powerful that he says, even if he sends me to hell, I can make hell into heaven, because my mind controls everything. Whatever wow. I think will become true. And then slowly he finds that what he has rebelled against is goodness itself. Mm-hmm. And he realizes that he has just become hell, that hell is now inside him. And wherever he goes, he then realizes, no, he can't turn hell into heaven. Instead, the only thing he can do is turn everything into hell. And so as an act of vengeance, the only thing he can do is basically see if he can get Adam and Eve to destroy themselves.
Come after humanity.
And so it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And as he does this, Satan becomes more and more degraded. He starts out as an angel, and he's beautiful. And he ends up as like a snake.
Yeah.
He ends up in the garden. And so he really becomes less and less. And what happened, this is a really interesting change, is the poem is written in the 17th century. The scientific revolution comes along, and all the other revolutions that come out of it, like the French Revolution, come along, and the revolution against the king that that Milton was in as well. But suddenly people are starting to think like, well, wait, the Bible isn't true. Science is true. We don't need the mind of God. The mind of man is going to fix everything. We are going to make life a paradise. The French Revolution was very much like the Soviet Revolution, that it was meant to make everything a paradise. They murdered priests. One of them said, we won't be free until the last priest is strangled with the entrails of the last king. And they were just going to replace religion with reason. And it all became this nightmare of beheadings and bloodshed. And it was at this point that people started to say, you know, Satan is really the hero of this poem, because he rebels against this tyrannical power of God, which was exactly the opposite of what John Milton was saying. Right. And it's what Bradley Cooper is saying. And every single, including me, I'm not better than anybody else, every single undergrad who reads this book in college thinks, oh, Satan is the hero. Because he's kind of an American. He fights back.
The underdog. The power.
Yes. And Milton's point was like, yes, that is fine if you're fighting with a man, because a man can be evil. But when you're fighting God, you're fighting goodness itself, and you're fighting yourself, because yourself is anchored in God. And so it's really a pity. I mean, Bradley Cooper talks about learning about this in college, and it sounds as like he went to a very good college. I can't remember what he said. It was GW Brown or someplace, a very good college, but he didn't seem to have learned that development, this idea that Satan was the hero of the piece, is actually a historical development, has nothing to do with the purpose of the piece. When I wrote that in college, my professor who was a real Milton scholar, a famous Milton scholar, wrote something on the side. I think it was like applesauce or something, you know, basically telling me that I was talking garbage when I said that Satan was the hero. And I laughed at him, because I was, of course, an undergrad and thought I was smarter than the professor, but he was obviously right. And so it's a shame that this poem can't be made into a film. I think it would make a great film. But I think that if it's hard to read, because the language is a little dated now. But I think if you can read it, it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of work, and a lot of famous lines. You'll recognize famous lines from it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful retelling of the Adam and Eve story.
Yeah, and we're living smack dab in it right now, because this heavenly war we're seeing, especially like you in this article, back to the Sydney Journal article, basically Europe has given up on God. I know German pastors. I'm very good friends with pastors in Switzerland, various European nations, and it is a battle for the faith. And there's this part in the Pinocchio story where he's given this, like, you can go to this island, you know, and have whatever you want, but there's a realization now you're stuck there. It's just when you get everything you want and you turn into a jackass. It's basically what you learn. Geppetto warned him about it. society's smack dab in the middle of it. In one of your episodes, you highlighted a baby reindeer TV show where it's just like, man, did you do a good job at highlighting? And I even did an episode recently just about that. Society, especially Hollywood, puts rose-colored glasses on. Hey, if you do everything you want, if you self-indulge, it will bring you peace. That show, Baby Reindeer, showed that it doesn't. It spiraled out of control. The man got what he wanted. His original, you know, he was raped and abused, groomed, thought maybe I'm gay, maybe I'm not. This whole movement of confusion stems back to Lucifer saying, hey, I'll give you whatever you want. In fact, he tempted Jesus with it, said, hey, if you just bow to me, I'll give you all of this. And Lucifer is doing that on a daily basis through social media. You can have all of this and it will bring you joy, but it doesn't.
Well, that, you know, the fact that it doesn't is a kind of our saving grace, because one of the things that I keep pointing out to people, and I have a hard time explaining this, all the things that these thinkers are saying about our sexuality, about our identity and all this, they all make sense. They all make perfect logical sense if there is no God.
Right.
If there is no God, if everything is just meat, if we're just meat, mm-hmm. if we're just flesh, then your desires are actually your identity. So when these people say, oh, this is my identity, this is my authentic self, I have to follow my authentic self, what they're talking about is their desires. Now, a minute's thought, a minute's realism, and getting away from philosophy, just living your life, you realize that if you follow your desires, you're going to end up a slave. You're going to end up a slave to your desires first, and then you're going to end up a slave to anybody who pulls you out of the pit that you've gotten yourself in. And so you start to think, well, it's not that my desires are my enemy. It's that my desires are disordered. They are out of keeping with who I really am. And so you have to start to pick and choose. I truly believe that when Jesus said, don't judge other people, he meant it, that he was not just talking in code, that basically I'm here to love the guy next to me, and I'm not here to sit around and tell him that he's out of line with God. That is not, I do not believe that that is my job. My job is to live into God, and hopefully that will make me so joyful that people want to be like that. You know, I think that that's your secret power. Your secret power is the joy that God puts in you when you actually come to him. But I think that I have a heart for people who honestly say, even if they're lost, as I feel this guy is, who say, you know, I followed my desires and now I'm in despair. And that really is the story of Baby Reindeer. He's in despair. He's in this cycle where he ends up in almost the exact same place that he begins. And he always will, as long as he follows those desires. And the fact that it's just amazing. Like the fact that people are getting more and more unhappy, women especially getting mm-hmm. more and more unhappy, but they won't stop doing what they're doing.
Right.
Is just a kind of wonderful, you know, amazing thing. Like, you know, you would just think, I sometimes ask myself, you know, why me? I mean, there's a million times I've said, I know that I was supposed to be suicidally depressed.
Right.
I look at the history of my life and I think, why did God call me out of that? And the only thing I can say that I brought to the table is that I thought I was supposed to be happy. I thought I was not supposed to be miserable. So that when I was miserable, I thought something is wrong. And it's fascinating to me that people don't do that. You know, they think that, you know, it's more fair if a woman can be just like a man. And that's right. Fair. That's the fair thing. And then they wind up miserable. And it never occurs to them to say, maybe fairness isn't the point. Maybe life is unfair. And fairness is what not, you know, something to guide ourselves by. It's very strange. It's just like the city of San Francisco goes down the drain, and it takes them years, decades before somebody says, you know, maybe we shouldn't have to live with people sleeping on the streets. You know, maybe we shouldn't have a crime-infested city. Maybe mm-hmm. the city was beautiful 30, 40 years ago. Maybe it should be beautiful again. It takes a long time before people realize that unhappiness is actually a gift that you are given to mm-hmm. let you know that you are not going down the wrong road. And joy is likewise a gift that lets you know that you are. And when I say joy, obviously I don't mean happiness. If something sad happens to me, I'm deeply, deeply sad. But I'm joyful to be here. You know, I'm joyful in life. I have what the poets call gusto. you know, that I'm here.
Panache.
Panache, yeah. No, I mean energy. Yeah, it's something that is uplifting and beautiful. It doesn't stop you from having grief. It doesn't stop you from having anxiety and pain, but it does kind of mean that you have this sort of outer shell that is looking at those things and thinking, okay, this is life. Now, what does God want me to do with this? Which is a lot better than despair, which I've also experienced. And it's just amazing how long it takes people to come to that point when they think, like, you know, maybe these drugs that caused me to wake up in the apartment of people I don't know feeling I've been sexually abused.
Right.
These drugs aren't the best thing for me. You know, maybe I should stop. It's weird that people don't do that.
Well, Jesus hung on the cross, and the Bible says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Like, he could have, I just love that scripture. And here's why. He could have said, for the honor that he would receive, he endured the cross. He could have said, for the glory. He could have said, for love even. But there was not a joyful moment, we can agree. Hung before the world. And a lot of people, you know, Catholic images, you know, your average cross shows Jesus in a loincloth. Even the Islamic people right now, one of the reasons I sat down with an Islamic person, he said, I will never, ever be able to believe that God would fully expose himself and be nude before the world. But that shows his level of humility, which is the exact opposite of Lucifer.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I really love your talking about that verse, because one of the least quoted verses in the Bible, and one of my favorites, is from John, where Jesus said, I told you those things, so my joy will be in you and your joy will be complete. And I'm just telling you from experience. And I don't want to make people think that I'm like some big yellow smiley face that doesn't experience grief and horror and all the and anger and all the things that we experience. It's just another, you know, in Eastern mysticism, they call it a third eye, by which you both experience life, but also see yourself experiencing life. And I think that is, you know, we refer to that, I think, as the spirit. It does give you this different level of life that is genuinely a life in abundance that you don't have otherwise. And, you know, one of my biggest fears, because I'm a tough guy writer, my mysteries are about low gangsters,
right,
and prostitutes, and killers, and those are the things I write about. One of my biggest fears when I realized that I was becoming a Christian was that I would become a smiley-faced idiot, and I wouldn't write those things.
They're out there. Bless their souls.
All my stories would have happy endings, and
right,
you'd find Jesus, and everything would be fine. But the exact opposite has happened. What has happened has been almost paradoxical, in that my view of life has become much darker. My view of the world has become very, very dark, and yet I find myself much more joyful than I've ever been. And that I become more realistic, I think. And yet also just fuller, you know, more full with some other experience that doesn't have to do with the world. And that's a very beautiful thing. And it's actually helped, I think, it's a strange to say it because I'm now 150 years old, but I think I'm writing better than I've ever written.
Come on.
And I think that's just a tremendously exciting thing.
Mm-hmm. So the good news is I see that on the spectrum, you're not at get off my lawn cranky, and you're also not at, there's the Christians that are this, blessed abundantly and overflowing, brother. And I ask, how are you doing? You get this guy, you ask him how he's doing, you go, better than I deserve. And I literally want to punch him in his face. Like, I know God is good, but I've had a really, really, you know, blankety blank week. So you're not helping.
Right. Yeah. No. And I'm working on being get off my lawn cranky. I'm trying. I'm striving.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed in your podcast, and I say to everyone, please, Andrew Clavin podcast, show up for a second, the Spotify, there's a channel. This will be the image here. On your podcast, you talk about this, you say this statement, we've already won the culture war. And for me to hear that, I was like, holy, something shifted in my brain. Yeah, that's your podcast right there. You talk a lot about how we just got to cash in the chips, so to speak. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners?
Well, I think the way I put it best, you know, because I've said it a couple of times in different ways, and the way I put it best is they've lost, mm-hmm, but we so far have refused to win. And I compared it to Hannibal, who basically crossed the Alps, came to Rome, and then never invaded the city. And there's all kinds of historical debates. Why did he never invade the city? The city was his for the taking, and he didn't take it. And I'm worried about this now, but I'm not in despair about it. I'm not sure it's not going to happen. Everything they have done has failed. Every point they have made has turned out to be untrue. People are absolutely miserable. Women are miserable. this week in the Wall Street Journal, the biggest story, the biggest news story that nobody's covering is the birth rate has fallen all over the world, mm-hmm. not just in advanced countries, but all over the world. It has fallen below replacement rate. Mankind is literally dying. Wow. And that's misery. That is despair. That people are not having children because they're in despair, I believe, although they may not know that that's what it is. So they have lost on every field, and even artists who love being on the left are saying suddenly, you know what, this is ruinous. This is not how we tell stories. We're not being allowed to speak our minds. We're not being allowed to say the things that we want to say. And I think that this is the moment for us to be creating and not complaining. I'm always against complaining. I'm always for creating. I mean, I sit down every morning and I write my books, and I have people screaming at me from the right and the left. I have the Jew haters screaming at me from the right, and I have the left wingers screaming at me from the left. And I just think, you know what? Knock yourselves out. I am going to create things mm-hmm. that I'm given to create. I don't believe that they come from me. I believe they come through me. And I'm going to sit down every morning and I'm going to do my work. And that's what I think we should all be doing. And I think, you know, I get a lot of letters from wannabe artists who say, well, how do I do this if they won't hire me? Because I was basically black, I believe. I have no yeah. proof of this, but my career in Hollywood ended like that when I right. started talking about politics and things like that. And I think, like, yeah, you're right. You won't be allowed into Hollywood, but there's all these materials available to make stuff with. You can publish your own books. You can publish your own movies. You can go on Substack. You know, I'm doing a conversation with my son about faith on Substack called The New Jerusalem. We've just started, but we're almost making enough money to pay us for the work we're doing. Not yet, but we're getting there. And it's just all these new avenues are available with which to reach the public. Hollywood is basically dead. It may come back, but right now, when was the last time anybody saw a movie that people were talking about? It was Barbie. That was the last time.
Right.
It was a mediocre movie.
It's horrible.
At least it was talking about something that people care about. Yeah, it's terrible. But people, you know, were interested in the subject, and it was very beautiful. It was very well done.
I liked the guys on horses. It was pretty cool. It was so confusing. Am I masculine? Am I feminine? What am I? Like you're coaxing me with being a really cool guy with like a saloon door on my house. But yeah, I was confused.
Yeah, the art direction was great, you know, and I just think, look, they've made themselves obsolete. So make yourself necessary. If you have the talent, if that's what your gift is, get to work and do it. And I think that I'm looking for that. The people who are doing it best are Christians, which is interesting. Angel Studios.
Yes, I'm so glad. I was going to ask you what your thoughts on Chosen series is, because you wrote a book called, and I haven't read it, but I'm going to read it, Son of Man. I wanted to get your take on, yeah. Is Dallas Jenkins doing a good job? Because you're the connoisseur.
Well, first of all, you don't have to read Son of Man, because it was written before I was a believer, and it was it's not only a bad book,
uh-oh.
It's a version of a good book, a better book that I couldn't get published, and so I rewrote it. And I'm not really proud of that book, but I think The Chosen is really good, very, very, very strong. I think the important thing about what they're doing is that they've gone around the typical distribution methods of Hollywood. That was always the big bottleneck. Is, look, you can take a credit card out of your pocket and make a really good looking movie if you're willing to go into debt. But you can't distribute it. Mm-hmm. And Angel Studios solved that problem with The Chosen. They then solved it again with Sound of Freedom, which is a good movie.
Amazing movie.
Straightforward thriller. Yeah. I mean, these are good films, and these are replacing the films like God Is Not Dead. They were kind of happy talk Christians, but created the audience. I don't knock those films, because you start with things that the audience wants to see, and those created the Christian audience, and along with Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, which is a beautiful, beautiful film. That's a genuine work of art. That's
so good.
Really amazing. So this is something that is happening. There's a kind of a spring going on, and whether or not it will be crushed, whether or not they're going to be able to stop us, you know, you never know these things, but I don't think so. I'm actually very hopeful. Really interesting. I'm sure you saw the kicker for the Chiefs, really good kicker for the Chiefs, make that speech to this Catholic college, and the absolute, dare I say, demonic outrage and attempts to now have him fired as a football player for actually speaking about his faith to those young men and women, especially telling the women that they have a vocation of homemaking and motherhood. Right. And wifehood that may be more important than, you know, pushing paper around at some corporation, you know, they're just absolutely inflamed. Well, they wouldn't be inflamed if they weren't vulnerable. You know, they wouldn't have to shut them down if they weren't vulnerable, just like Trump wouldn't be in court
right.
if they thought an argument against him. So this is actually a very, very positive moment. But if you think the positive moment means that you're just going to breeze in there and everything's going to be fine and people are going to be throwing money at you because you wrote a book that says Jesus, Jesus, that's not what's going to happen. This is going to be a fight for every inch of territory. Listen, you know, my detective stories that I'm writing now, I'm writing the series of detective stories called the Cameron Winter series. They have been straight. I've had three of them straight bestsellers, all three of them straight bestsellers. I'm still arguing with editors who are telling me, oh, you know, you shouldn't say he was crippled. You know, I think, well, if crippled isn't bad, you know, why do we have to heal people who are crippled? I mean, crippled is bad. It should be a word that sounds bad. We should be able to speak as we please. But you still have to make these struggles because of this unithink in the publishing industry, in the movie business. And that's only going to be broken up by rebels. You know, it's going to be like the American Revolution, where they're going to march in lockstep with huge force, and we're going to pop up from behind trees and take pot shots at them until we win. And I think that that's what I'm seeing right now. I think it's a tremendously exciting moment. I'm thrilled to be at the Daily Wire, where they're part of it. You know, even the failures that you have doesn't mean a thing. You should try and fail. That's fine. But we have to keep trying. We have to keep making things. We have to complain less, and we have to learn more and create more. And that's the moment that we're in.
Yeah. And obviously you can take it however you want. I don't feel like Jesus was a pacifist. I don't feel like the caricature actually of Jesus in Milton's Paradise Lost, he seemed a little bit soft. And that's one thing I didn't like. Jesus, to me, through The Chosen and through other ways, I feel like he's a very strong, just frankly, badass carpenter.
In Paradise Lost, the poem, he is the general who chases the rebel demons out of heaven into hell. He's a very hard-boiled character. And, you know, this is my friend Jeremy, who runs the Daily Wire. He always says, like, I dare anybody to go in to the Gospels and find a page where Jesus is nice.
Right. And I think, you know what, you say this also on your podcast, it's not about dominating the left. It's about taking culture back. And I think that's what they, for some reason, I think the left sometimes just wants to take us to the shed, beat us over the head and indoctrinate us, get us thinking in unimind, you know, with them. What was that word that you said where the experts know everything?
I put it up so I can find it again. Because ultra crepidarianism. It's the...
Wow.
Yeah, I know. How many people know that word? Ultra crepidarianism. It's when people are experts in something, so they think they're experts in everything.
That's
so it's like, yes, it's like Richard Dawkins declaring that there's no God because he knows a lot about biology. And you think, like, hey, you know, I'll listen to you talk about biology any day, you know, but he knows nothing. You know, this is not a personal attack on him. He knows nothing about theology. And it's funny because when they start talking, you're listening and they're disproving things. There's this writer, Steven Pinker, we were talking about before we started, who has huge portions of one of his books disproving the idea of a ghost in the machine. We don't have a soul because there's no ghost in the machine. And I think, you know, that's not a Christian concept, the ghost in the machine. Nobody thinks that Casper the Friendly Ghost is living inside our bodies.
No.
You know, we understand that our bodies are who we are, and they represent, like a word represents an idea, they represent the spirit that we are. And I think that I just think, why are you wasting ink talking about something you know nothing about, disproving something that nobody believes? It's because they never read anything but their own subject, which is fine. Just talk about your own subject. You know, but ultra crepidarianism.
They know everything. Well, I love that you're not a pacifist. You're not just saying, hey, you know, sometimes where the Christian response to, everything just seems to, hey, you know, just prayer. We're just praying for you. We're sending you kisses. No, we're actually wanting to influence the culture, and that requires us doing something. And you are doing that. We want to just in the few minutes here that we have you in studio, Andrew, we have your website up, andrewclavin.com. I love how there is no E in Clavin. Like that's, it's a great jingle. Everyone always remember it's K-L-A-V-A-N. Tell us about anything that we can find you on. Now, obviously I said your podcast, that's through the Daily Wire, the Andrew Clavin Show. Is there any way we can get in touch with you or not necessarily get in touch with you, but support you?
Yeah. You know, please, I mean, take a look at the books. If you love mystery stories, the Cameron Winter series starts with a book called When Christmas Comes, and people have absolutely really loved it. My writing about poetry, there's a book called The Truth and Beauty. But, you know, if you go on my website, andrewclavin.com, you'll see all that. I'm on X, though it's kind of become an unpleasant place to be, so I can't recommend that to anybody. But you know, I also have this Substack called The New Jerusalem, which is thenewjerusalem.substack.com, where we're just having a conversation about God in the modern world and God in this moment of transhumanism. So there's a lot of places you can find me, but if you go on the website, you'll find just about all the places you can find me. And if you write to me there, I will hear from you. I will get that in my mailbox.
That's awesome. I appreciate your time. It sounds like, where are you living these days? Where is home for you?
I'm on in the East. I don't like to be too specific about it.
Don't name the town.
I'm not far from Washington, D.C. That's basically where I am.
Well, good. We have you, there with the thinkers and the literary workers. And then also, of course, the politicians. So any last words or any thoughts to our listeners, especially on the subject, just briefly on this whole idea of the separation of church and state? That's our goal here, is to separate and understand, you know, and explain to people. That was simply just Jefferson telling people, you know, the Danbury Baptists, no, I'm not going to come into your world. You're fine. Any thoughts in your world as far as that illusion?
Funny, I was just going to talk about this on my show tomorrow. My show is on Fridays. I was just going to talk about this because when they say that you can't argue from the point of view of God, they're lying to you, because there is no morality without God. There is no way to form an objective moral landscape without God. So when they say to you something like, oh, you know, this poor Hamas terrorist, you know, you have to feel for him that he's being hurt by the Israelis, they actually are talking about God. They are talking about your compassion for a fellow human being, which is not important at all unless there's a God. You know, every moral statement they make. And so then you have the right to say, well, you know, did God approve of this guy, you know, raping and killing people? Does God approve of the destruction of the Israeli state? Does God want more states to look like Saudi Arabia? You know, what do you think God wants? Because if they're talking about him, you should be talking about him too. So the great Justice Antonin Scalia said, the government has no right to choose between religions, but it does have a right to choose theism over no religion at all. Yes. And I think that that's what we're talking about. I don't want to tell anybody how to pray.
Right.
I do think when they say, oh, we have to put a satanic statue up if we put up a Christmas tree, I think that's nonsense. I think a religion is a relationship with God, and I think we have freedom of how we worship God. If we're not talking about him, we're just letting them talk about him in disguise. And so I think we should be bold. I think we should say exactly why we think what we think. I think we should know why we think what we think, and think about why God says certain things and not other things. But, you know, because I don't think you can just slam the Bible and convince people. But I think that we should not be shy at all about saying what it is we believe and taking the hits, just like that, the kicker for the Chiefs. And good for
exactly.
Him.
Somebody has to do it. Donald Trump, in a lot of ways, he's taking the hits for us. I very appreciate the fact that, you know, being in your circle, you've not only stepped out for Jesus Christ, but you're a voice for Donald Trump. Thank you for what you do, Andrew. Thank you for being on the show. Just really pleased with just everything you're doing. Good, you know, Jesus wishes to your latest project with your son. I think that's really powerful when we involve our sons. So it's been a pleasure having you.
Thanks a lot, Kev. It was really nice to meet you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Listeners, on behalf of Church and State, I'm Pastor Gabe Blomgren. A calm does not suit you, and I am born for a storm.
Welcome to the fire.
MyPillow.com has got more than just pillows. You've got your slippers, your bathrobes. You have towels that actually dry you off, not the kind you buy at Walmart where it's just kind of a slick mess. They have got some of the best products out there. The sheets are absolutely incredible. I think it's a 1,000 count. It's the best products you can buy. And the pillows even have silencer technology in it. And so if you need a day where you're just going to scream into your pillow, don't worry, your neighbors won't hear you.
Why would you want to go to Bed Bath & Beyond? First of all, they're out of business. You want to go support an American-made product, go to mypillow.com. And then you're also supporting one of the nation's most, I would say, Jesus-filled, and a company that is completely, completely built on the gospel of Jesus Christ. So you're getting a 2-for-1 there. You know you've wanted good night's sleep for years. You're tossing, you're turning. Just go now. Go to mypillow.com. Use promo code Church and State.
CHURCHANDSTATE. That's Church and State.
You do not want to eat synthetic meat. If you can grow a meat in a lab, if you want to go ahead and have Soylent Green on the table, feel free to eat this garbage that Target's trying to throw out. But if you want actual meat that's been freeze-dried, it's been processed by actual human beings, go to griddownchowdown.com.
Look, the World Economic Forum has declared a war on red meat. They hate the cows. They hate the cow farts. There is supply chain issues. And for me, you can pry my steak from my cold, dead hands.
If you want a meat that's going to last freeze-dried 10 years or more, this is the product you want.
I want all of you to go to griddownchowdown.com. Use the promo code Church and State. These are fantastic freeze-dried raw beef. The blood is still in it. You just rehydrate it and add it to your favorite meal, and you are ready to go. And remember, the Holy Word of God tells us, for one person has faith to eat all things, while another who is weak eats only vegetables. That's Romans 14:2. The doctor that I recommend for all of your needs is the Underground Clinic doctor, Dr. Troy Spurl.
Because Dr. Troy is the best doctor, bar none.
You know, this is the great thing about officialsignups.com is it's in all 50 states. You don't have to be in Michigan or Minnesota. You can be in Hawaii, you can be in Florida, and you can find a doctor that you can trust. If you are still wearing a mask, if you have rolled up your sleeve and gotten all the jabs and all the boosters, then Official Signups is not for you. You want to go find one of those big pharma doctors that'll give you all the prescriptions you want, and you can live a very sickly life.
Well, if you're looking for a doctor for yourself, or maybe even a doctor for your family, or a doctor who's not going to push vaccines on you, you want to go to officialsynapse.com. You for sure need to mention Church and State when you go to officialsynapse.com to take part in all the savings, all the great deals for you and your family.
With the rise of the BRICS nations, you've got a lot of nations that are gathering together, and they're all doing a gold-backed currency. The United States is not, and the petrodollar is starting to fail. And my suggestion to all of you would be to get behind gold and silver, because that is the currency that is always going to have value.
I might not be a gold or silver guru, but I want to have something tangible in my hands at the end of the day. So I would definitely recommend every one of you go to bh-pm.com.
All you got to do is look around and see that the price of everything is increasing. Gold and silver is on the rise. It's being artificially suppressed. You want to schedule a consultation right now so that your families don't end up in the breadline and you're saying, please, sir, can I have some more?
Stop waiting. What are you waiting for? 4 years from now, prices are going to be absolutely astronomical. Go to bh-pm.com. Get a consultation now. You definitely want to mention Church and State. It will get you the best prices. It will get you the best consultation advice. Use Church and State when you go to bh-pm.com.
This was sacred to God.
Now is the time to act.
This is exactly why I need some action for my people.
Hello, everybody. It's an honor to be with you.